Dogcast Radio. If you like dogs, wherever you are in the world, we're the show for you. Hello and welcome to episode 27 of Dogcast Radio. In this episode, we have a fascinating breed profile.
If you throw a ball, they'll watch it roll down the garden as if to say, what have you done that for? It's not, oh, I'll rush and get that for you. Yeah. And then you go, fetch, and they go, what? You threw it, you fetch it. Yeah. And that's a chow.
We have a great source of information and advice from the charity People and Dogs.
We had a series of leaflets and fact sheets about looking after dogs, about whether you ought to get a dog, how to choose one once you've decided you should, right the way through to caring for dogs in old age.
And we have our fantastic Dogcast Radio news.
We've featured the dangers of leaving your dog in a car, but here's a story of a dog who left his owner in the car, but it turned out all for the best.
Before all that, I've been thinking about dog training. Mainly because I'm being confronted by it in a big way and going through all the dilemmas involved with our puppy, Star. We all want a dog that is a pleasure to be with, knows his boundaries and how to react to the situations he may find himself in during the day. This translates in practical terms into the following. That he doesn't knock visitors to the ground. That he doesn't gallop down the road with us lurching unwillingly behind, arms stretched to breaking point. And that he meets humans and dogs with a wagging tail. None of this happens without training. My dog is not highly trained, but if I tell him to sit, he sits. I'm surprised at how many fellow dog owners observe this and say, gosh, isn't he well trained? Now, sit is fairly basic, and I would have thought one of the first things we teach our dogs, but it does seem that there are people out there who can't get a sit out of their dog. Why is that? The area of dog training is a well-explored one, and almost everyone has a philosophy on it. This philosophy may well be, look, since he hasn't actually eaten the neighbours yet, leave him to his own devices. But it's there. Should you want to flex your dog training muscles, there are endless books, videos, and even classes and courses to help you. There is much confusion in the area, though. I was once told by a breeder that I would never have a well-behaved dog because I didn't shout. Now, I have a voice, and I know how to use it. In my professional capacity, I could stop a child in its tracks across a school playground. But why should I employ this tool with my dog when he's at close range, has excellent hearing, and more to the point, he carries out my instructions when I issue them quietly? The breeder in question confidently told me I would never be able to live happily with two dogs if I didn't start shouting. This was in spite of the fact that my dog was under perfect control and following orders. Her dogs, I don't know what they were, as we were never allowed to meet them, were in the next room. While I cannot name their breed, I picture them as something like the savage three-headed dog in one of the Harry Potter films, and I will convey to you the evidence on which I base this image. When I want to enter a room, I can tell my dog to sit and open the door while he waits. I then have the choice of going through the door and giving him the command to follow me, or I can shut the door on that sad Labrador face and leave him outside. Now, compare this to the scene in the breeder's house. Several times, people went in and out of the room containing the dogs, and every time the performance was more or less the same. There was lots of noise, both shouting from the person and barking and snarling from the dogs. The door would open slightly and a sliver of the person leaving the room would appear through the gap. The door would shudder under the combined weight of several three-headed dogs flinging themselves at it, and the door might well shut slightly. This would be repeated with a little more of the person appearing at intervals until the whole had made it through, and the door was shut quickly with relief. The out-of-breath person would lean against the closed door, which continued to bulge and shiver as the dogs carried on hurling themselves against it. This was the pinnacle of training I was told I would never achieve. Now, she might have had a bad philosophy, but she had one, along with necessarily strong doors. Perhaps that works for her and her three-headed pack, but it's not for me. And honestly, there's the crux of the matter. What works for me might not work for you, or more relevantly, your dog. The key with training is to find what conveys your message to your dog effectively. Make it fun, make it pleasant, but make it clear. The method doesn't matter. What matters is doing it. Have a go. And if it doesn't work, try something else. Some training issues may well require the guidance of a professional, in which case, sort yourself out a good one and take his or her advice. There's no shortage of them, and they'll be only too pleased to help. Positive, reward-based methods get great results, whether you're clicking, using discs, or a whistle. I have spoken to many trainers while working for Dogcast, and the key is to find what motivates your dog, whether that's praise, toys, or food. Find a philosophy that works for you, and then work at it. What's my philosophy, you ask? Well, I've managed to get one dog to the point of being a pleasure to be with. He frequently does not pull me arm first along the road, and he greets all and sundry as his best friend. However, now I'm confronted with training our second dog, do I have any more of a clue? Basically, this is what I do. I show my dog what to do, and when he does it, I reward him. When he does something undesirable, I either ignore, gently correct, or simply withhold a treat. When everything else fails to stop an extremely unwelcome behaviour, a water pistol can be invaluable. Short, sharp, painless, but effective. It's a wonderful thing about dogs that they want to fit in, they want to please, and with encouragement, they soon do. They are all individuals, though, and one lesson I have learned is that tasks picked up easily by one dog may be harder for another dog. However we train, the most important thing is that we do train. Just for the record, neither of my dogs has actually eaten the neighbours. So far. Training was an issue we discussed about the breed featured in our breed profile this time, which is the Chow Chow. It's a fascinating dog. The history of the Chow is difficult to establish for sure. It may or may not have originated in China. According to legend, when the world was created and the stars were set in the heavens, pieces of sky were displaced and fell to earth. The Chow was allowed to lick them up, and that is how he got his blue-black tongue. The Chow has two more teeth than most dogs, and it has been claimed it descended from bears, not wolves. This is a lot to live up to. We met some beautiful Chows and talked to their owners about life with this breed. This first lady knows an awful lot about living with Chows.
I have 15 Chows.
Wow.
They age range from nearly 12 down to 5 weeks. Mm. I've got various generations, father, grandmother, great-grandmother, different colours. The only thing colour we've not got at home is a cream, but we have bred a cream. So we've got blues, blacks, fawns, and reds. Mm. We don't have smooths, or they're all rough coated, and they're completely different temperaments, even though they're very family orientated and they all go back to the same lines, but they've got all different temperaments. Some are very standoffish, which is very much what your typical Chow standard says. Some of them are so friendly, they're your best buddy, and if you've got a problem, you can sit and they'll listen. Mm. And they're all different. Mm. And that's what I enjoy about them, and I enjoy the fact that they're not dogs that are in your face all the time. They go off and they just go and do their own thing. Some of them, we have one that lives with us, he tolerates us, he's not desperately bothered about us. But that's very typical Chow as well for some of them.
Mm. Are they interfered? I mean, when you say he's not bothered,
if you go to him to fuss him, he looks at you, you might get a very slight tail wag. If you go to hug him, he'll go stiff, and you're not going to hug me, are you? You're not going to be very friendly. And if you pretend you're going to kiss him, he grits his teeth and go on then, I'll have to wait. And he's just great fun to torment. Yeah. We have great fun tormenting. I'm going to kiss you. No. And then others, some of them will actually lick you, and others will never, ever lick you. And the other thing we often find with our Chows is, if you give them food, if they take it, which often they won't, they they'll put it down first and check it just to make sure you're not going to poison them. And even though they've sat and waited for it, and they can be 10 years old and they'll still check what you give them first. Or sometimes, if it's very often, they won't take it from a stranger at all. Yeah. What are you giving me that for? And another thing that fascinates me as well, which people don't understand with chows, is that if you throw a ball, we have got the odd one that will fetch a ball. But if you throw a ball, they'll watch it roll, because we've got Japanese Shibuya as well. But they'll watch it roll down the garden as if to say, what have you done that for? It's not, oh, I'll rush and get that for you. And then you go, fetch, and they go, what? You threw it, you fetch it. And that's a chow.
Brilliant.
As other people mentioned, talk about them, people say, oh, is it like a husky? Oh, it's like a big teddy bear. Lots of people that pass them by say, oh, it's like a big lion. Bear is a very common one, because they are very profusely coated. They have a big lion mane. They have cat feet, very pronounced cat feet, not toes like, say, a Doberman would have. And when they, what they say is, if they stand four square, you should be able to chop the head off and you've got a box. The tail should sit flat on their back. They are a very square shape. They've not got angulation on the back leg like all other breeds have. They have a very straight back leg, which gives them the very stilted gait that they're supposed to have, which is special for the chow. And of course, the most important thing of all is they all have a blue tongue. And black, with blacks particularly, you should see no pink in their mouths at all. They should be completely black. And they say, the stories are from, you know, hundreds of years ago, that they were kept in the monasteries of Tibet and China, to when they bark and their mouth opens, they ward off evil spirits. Things like that.
Yeah.
That's a chow.
Now, the obvious thing that strikes you when you see a chow is that coat. It is gorgeous. Now, how much grooming is involved with that?
A lot as a puppy, because they're like, you can dunk them in water and they just suck it all up as a puppy. But as an adult, they have a very coarse coat that it keeps the water off, and they're quite difficult to get wet when you start to bath them. You can groom a puppy, and 10 minutes later, when you take it in the ring, you start all over again. The puppy coat, you can groom it, and it's a very woolly, soft coat, and it will look nothing again in 15, 20 minutes' time. But as an adult, they're very little grooming in actual fact, and if you give them half an hour a week, you will keep on top of the coat. It does not get, the only thing is you get the knots behind the ears if you don't keep on top of the coat. But normally they've got a very coarse outer coat and a woolly undercoat, and they can sometimes, they'll blow the coat when they're molting, and you can strip it out virtually within a couple of weeks. But they're not a difficult dog to keep. People think that they take masses of grooming, and they don't. And they also think that they take lots of food, because they're a very heavyweight dog, much heavier than you actually realise. Even if they're small, they'll normally be quite heavy. But they don't eat anything like what they recommend on the dog food packets. And you'll never get a chow. Well, I've never found a chow to eat that amount of food anyway. And I never restrict puppies when they're eating. I give puppies as much food as they'll have, and you don't get, never get fat puppies either.
Do they shed?
Yes, they do. But yet again, if you keep on top of the coat and you groom it, they don't shed that much. And they're not, different breeds seem to have different sort of hairs, where short-coated dogs that are flat-coated, the hairs are very sharp and seem to stick into things and you can't get them out. Chow coat lays on the top of things. It's a very soft sort of, their undercoat's very soft, and it will lay more on a coat, and you can, if you know, you can rub it off, sort of thing. It still will stick, and they do shed, but not as I think, yet again, as people think they do for the coat that the dog has got.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And what about exercise?
Yet again, some prefer more exercise than others. They can go, you know, I know people that, and I've had them myself, I've walked 3 miles, and others that look at you like, why are you making me do this? This is torture. And I never asked to go for a walk. So, yeah, again, they're all different. I used to have one big male. We set off on a walk, go across the fields, and he would insist on walking through the stream, through two fields and under an archway until he came out the other side. And he was just adored it. But I had another girl that She didn't think she should need to go for a walk. She didn't understand why.
Okay, if someone's looking to get a chow, what sort of, not necessarily the one thing, but what's the essential knowledge they need before they get a chow?
They need to know that a chow, as in any breed of dog, is right for them, their family and their way of life. If you want a dog that fetches a ball and does exactly as you tell it, don't have a chow. You will get chows that you can do that with. You will get chows that are extremely well behaved, and you can train to minor agility or whatever, but that doesn't mean to say that the chow that you get will do that.
No.
And I've had chows that my first chow, I walked off the lead until he was 7 months, and then one day he saw something he wanted to see, he looked back and thought it's worth it, and off he went. And that, he always did that after that. He was a very good lad until he wanted to do something that chose him. And that's the chow. And if you smack them for doing something, they'll go back and do it again, as if to say, it didn't hurt, see.
So, I'm not bothered.
Well, that's particularly the same dog I'm talking about actually got in my mother-in-law's pond, which hadn't been cleaned out for 6 years. I came home to their house and my husband had just finished washing him off. He was covered in green algae. And when he let him go, and I could tell by the look in his eyes what he was going to do, and he went straight back, got in the pond and sat down in it.
And they look at you sometimes, don't they? Like, what are you going to do now then?
Yeah, I'm not bothered. Yeah. This is what I'm going to do, and I've done it. You can't stop me doing what I want. That's a chow.
Can you tell me about your chows?
My chows are gorgeous, bless them. I've got three reds, a blue, which is quite rare, and two blacks. I kept three from a litter, which I must be totally mad. And I've got a 15-year-old boy.
All right. So you got your hands full.
Yes.
And so what's it like to live with six chows?
It's a pleasure. It really is. I mean, you don't own them, they own you. But they just don't do anything, if you know what I mean. They're naughty sometimes, but you come in, they're there to greet you, and then they just disappear. And then they come for fuss when they want the fuss, and that, and then the feeding times. And I also take my blue boy swimming, which is quite fun.
Right. Have they taken to that?
He loves it. Always since he was a baby, he loves his swimming. So he goes three times a week.
Right. Excellent.
I've got time for children because the dog takes it all up.
And I mean, other than the swimming, sort of, how much exercise do they like?
Not a great deal. They're not really walkie dogs. Round the block and back, but no, not a great deal of exercise. They play in the garden. Got quite a large garden. And so they all go just once around the block. Even my 15-year-old, he likes to go, but we only take him like to the end of the row of houses and back again, just so he thinks that he's been.
And I mean, you said about playing. Are they quite playful, or does it depend on the mood they're in?
I think it depends on each one individually. Some will play and some won't play. I mean, my boy, he plays and he likes his toys, but he won't do it to show. He'll only do it at home.
Yeah,
but when you come in, he has to have something in his mouth to take outside or whatever. And my girl, his sister, little sister, she's just a nightmare. She just loves play. All the time she's playing. And yet the mum is quite subdued and, she plays when she wants to play. Just same as people, I suppose, isn't it?
And if someone was looking to get a chow, what's sort of the best advice that you could give them?
A loving, friendly home, really. Yeah, I mean, you either love a chow or you hate a chow, because chows will dominate you. They are very cat-like, whereas they do want fuss when they want fuss. You need to go into the breed to find out what a chow exactly is like. And as I say, some people love them, some people hate them, and it's just one of them things, isn't it?
Let's see whether it's your taste or not.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, and I mean, grooming as well. There is an awful lot of grooming involved, especially from changing from puppy coat to adult coat. So obviously you've got to take that into consideration. I mean, if you let the coats go, they can get awfully knotty. You're not supposed to trim the chow, so you can't say, oh well, I'll take it and have it trimmed or cut off or whatever, because you're not supposed to. I suppose you could, but it's not fair to let the dog get into that state.
No. How many chows have you got?
We've got about five or six, something like that. I've lost count.
Several?
Yeah, several, yeah.
Tell me about your chows.
they're sort of, some are sort of more confident than others, and some some tend to back off. Like this one, he's a little bit nervous sometimes. So they're varying in colour. We got blacks and got a couple of reds and one cream as well. We've got three male dogs and four bitches.
What's it like in the house with that many chows?
We got only probably about three in the house, and because we've got kennels as well, sort of, they stay down there for like the night, where we only have like three special ones in the house. Mm. And actually, they get on quite well. Like the male dog, he actually just sleeps with the bitches, and he don't really feel pestered them, and he gets on well, type of thing. Yeah. And maybe like the younger ones tend to like play up the older ones. We have got a cream bitch who sort of tends to, she's like about 5 years old, and she tends to like act like a puppy, and she tends to play with the younger ones.
Now you've been grooming quite a while. Obviously, yeah. You're going to groom more on a show day.
Yeah, yeah.
But in general, how much grooming is there?
Actually, they don't drop their coat that often, so yeah, do you have to groom them, because they sometimes leave like little tufts of fur coming out, so you have to groom them. So it takes about an hour, sort of. Probably a day top thing just to groom them, probably less than that. Also, they probably also tend to dribble. He like dribbles a lot. Some don't, some do. Some of these dribbles a lot, so you have to like wash his front and sort of make sure that's dry. But you have to like, put a little towel around his neck to keep him so soak up the moisture. But some, we have got some that don't actually dribble a lot, so they don't do any work on the. A cresty quite dry around the front, but it's some do, some don't. It's like
When you say they dribble, do they, you know, do they have a slobber?
They don't slobber. They just dribble down the sides of their thing. They don't have big drooling things coming out of there like mastiffs do. That's bulldogs. They just like dribble down the side lot, like down the side of the mouth. So you don't see an actual obvious saliva sort of coming out of the mouth, sort of thing.
And what's training like with a chow?
There's one that's actually I heard of that actually do obedience training. That's actually, they don't live too far. I think Sheldon they live or somewhere around there. They've actually got a black dog, and because he's a bit nervous in the ring. But what they did like go to ringcraft and actually done obedience training, and he actually does heel work and sit and stay commands. It's like, look at that. Actually, to be honest, chows actually are a bit sort of like, can't be bothered really. They're like a cat. They're sort of, they throw a stick and they're like, you throw it yourself, get yourself, that sort of thing. Some they're quite sort of lazy. Some are lazy, some are more active than others. So there's some are more obedient than others. Depends how well you want to train them, type of thing. So you probably can train them if you've got the patience and stuff to do them. Yeah.
And are they food motivated? I mean, with the training?
Especially in the ring. You can put a piece of cheese and they do look up. They look up and it'll look when you sort of give a piece of cheese and stuff. Liver or cheese, yeah. Some don't. Some like tend to like sniff the grass and can't even bother with food. But it's, like, it's very, it depends on, they got each of their own sort of characteristics, really. That sort of yeah.
So if somebody was looking to get a chow, what would be the most important piece of advice that you can give them?
It probably depends on the chow, because some chows, it's probably the heat wise. If you're like a heavier chow, it may probably struggle in the heat. Heat can bother, yeah. That's what I think, yeah.
You're busy grooming at the moment, so how much grooming is involved with a chow?
If it's a household pet, then a regular groom once a week is adequate. That'll keep them respectable. If they're prepared for a show, then it's a different story. Then, you know, you bath, you dry, and you groom thoroughly, so it's maybe half a day.
Right.
In total.
And do they shed much?
Not really, no. Once a year. Yeah. Once a year.
No, says the lady covered in hair.
These two are puppies.
Yeah.
So they're going from puppy fluff, as you can see on the top of the head of that one, into a harsher, harder coat, which is their adult coat.
So how
and of course the puppy fluff is going to come out. Yeah. That one is 10 months, this one's 9 months.
Oh, they're beautiful. And what's it like to live with a chair?
Well, they're very easy to live with because they're not particularly demanding. They want to be with you, but they're not pushing for attention and that sort of thing. So they're reasonably easy to live with.
Yeah.
A bit choosy food-wise, but not too bad. They don't eat a tremendous amount. They don't demand a great deal of exercise. they're disobedient. they're conveniently deaf when they want to be. Mm. Obviously the grooming is something you have to cope with, and they don't cope with very hot weather terribly well. Mm. So, you know, weather like we've had in the last week, then you take them out early morning or late at night when it's cool. Mm. Other than that, lovely to live with. And they'll live with most other breeds, no problem. Mm. Live with cats, great with children.
Yeah.
Ideal. But not hard, not easy to get. Quite hard to come by. Yeah. They're not very common. Mm.
All the chows we had encountered so far had the longer, rough coat. Then we spotted one that Jenny referred to as a sweet little one, which we had to go and investigate.
So this is the smooth coat?
That's right, yes. Yeah. Both his parents are rough-coated.
Oh, right.
Yes, he's just a throwback from years ago.
Yeah.
And it's more like the original chow used to be.
Yeah.
He's only a baby, so he's a bit full of himself today.
And so, with the different coat, is there sort of less grooming?
Because a lot less grooming, yes. Yes, apart from when they molt. Mm. And then it's difficult to get through because it's so thick and short, it's difficult to get the comb in.
Yes.
But normally, no, it's very easy to look after. Mm. And, of course, it's cooler for him.
Yes. And other than sort of the opposite difference, the coat is shorter, is it still the same temperament?
Oh, exactly the same, yes. Yes, just as willful. Not the most trainable of dogs, as I'm no doubt you realise. I'm afraid he's looking for mischief at the moment.
So, the two coats may look different, but the same challenging individual is underneath. If you'd like to see photos of the striking chows we met, check out the Dogcast site. You're listening to Dogcast Radio on www.dogcastradio.com.
Hello and welcome to the Dogcast Radio News Desk. I'm Nick.
And I'm Kate. We are all aware of the importance of keeping our dogs and ourselves at a healthy weight. But the latest health warning issued to dog owners is that some sugar-free items are extremely dangerous for dogs. The sweetener xylitol is used in many sugar-free products, such as chewing gum, sweets, baked goods and even toothpaste. And while it may help us humans in the battle of the bulge, it's not good news for our dogs. Researchers and staff at the American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals in Illinois studied 8 dogs who had eaten xylitol. Of these 8, 5 became so ill they died or had to be put to sleep due to liver failure. Further studies are necessary, but it seems that a seemingly tiny amount of xylitol can endanger a dog, and obviously the smaller a dog, the less amount of the substance that will make him ill. The best advice is to keep those sugar-free items out of your dog's way and to seek urgent veterinary help if your dog does eat any.
We've featured the dangers of leaving your dog in a car, but here's a story of a dog who left his owner in the car. But it turned out all for the best. James Ironside was driving along the A85 in Perthshire, Scotland, when his car left the road, careered down an embankment and hit a tree. James was knocked unconscious, but his Alsatian cross dog, Kelly, managed to break a window and ran from the vehicle back up onto the road. Clever Kelly ran to the home of James's colleague, Paul Elston, and led Paul back to the crash site. The emergency services were summoned and poor James was cut out of his car and taken to hospital. But without Kelly's actions, her master could have been stuck in his car all night. Happily, James suffered only minor injuries and he and Kelly are both back home now.
In Surrey, England, another dog was trying to be helpful in the car. Juliet Priestley had only just changed the battery in her electronic key fob, but still her car wouldn't start. When an AA man was called to diagnose what was wrong with the car, he noticed that the immobiliser chip was missing. Juliet recalled that her 2-year-old dog George had been eating something earlier, and sure enough, when George was put into the front seat of the car, it would start. Juliet is waiting for the chip to re-emerge, but until then, George has done a great job of making sure he has to accompany his owner on every car journey she makes.
In the US, in conjunction with National Adopt-a-Shelter Dog Month in October, Bark Busters, the world's largest dog training company, has announced a national program to provide discounted training services to those who adopt a dog this month from a local shelter. This programme, provided through Barkbuster's nationwide network of dog behavioural trainers, is designed to further Barkbuster's mission to promote responsible dog ownership, enhance the enjoyment of our canine friends, and reduce the possibility of abuse and euthanasia of companion dogs.
With nearly 10 million animals entering local shelters annually, Adopt a Shelter Dog Month helps focus attention on the growing pet population problem in the US. According to research at Tufts University School of Veterinary Medicine, many pets brought to shelters are surrendered because of behaviour problems that their owners believe to be permanent. Approximately 70% of these animals end up being put to sleep, making death from behaviour problems the leading cause of pet mortality, ahead of trauma and disease. This means thousands of dogs are euthanised every year, the vast majority unnecessarily.
October is Adopt a Shelter Dog Month, and we suggest that people looking for a canine companion visit their local shelters across the country, says Liam Crow, COO and Master Dog Behavioural Therapist at Barkbusters. But adopting a dog comes with the responsibility of pet ownership, which requires more than simply taking an animal into your life. Adopters must make a commitment to care and training that will enhance the lives of both the human and the animal. The Barkbusters Adopt a Shelter Dog program is available to those who adopt a dog from a shelter during October, and dog adopters in the US can call 877-500-BARK or visit www.barkbusters.com.
Well, that excellent offer wraps up today's edition of the Dogcast Radio News. But remember, however our canine companions come into our lives, training is the key to living harmoniously with them. Goodbye.
Do you ever want advice about your dog? Well, I found a charity, PADS, that is on hand to provide advice and help. I talked to Chairman Debbie, who told me all about PADS.
Well, PADS stands for People and Dog Society, and it's a registered charity which aims to promote responsible dog ownership. But we find that's a fairly wide remit, especially when you haven't got any legal powers to enforce your ideas. So the angle of it that we emphasise tends to be helping people who would like to be responsible but who have problems achieving that.
Mm. And how is that actually put into practice?
Well, partly through the website, which is quite large and which is published, obviously available to anybody. You don't have to register or join to use it. All the information is freely available. We have a series of leaflets and fact sheets about looking after dogs, about whether you ought to get a dog, how to choose one once you've decided you should, right the way through to caring for dogs in old age. And we run a telephone advice service which answers any dog-related question that people care to ring with.
Right. And that number's available on the website?
There are a series of numbers, yeah, all around the UK, and they are on the website.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, the website's very interesting. I actually found it. I was searching on photo competition, and you've run a photo competition, and there was a beautiful picture of a border collie sitting in a hallway in the mayhem and destruction that it had caused. And it was just beautiful, and that's how I discovered the website.
Yes, well, a few people do find us that way. Quite often people are searching for information about looking after dogs. In particular, we find that house training tends to be a worry for people.
Mm.
But we do also have things like competitions and pictures and general information about dogs on the website, as well as just sort of preaching to people. We like to make the site fun. There are competitions they can enter, and details of any events that we happen to be running.
Mm. I think it's a very useful service, having that information there, because, I mean, for example, you've just mentioned toilet training. That's an issue I'm grappling with at the moment. We've got a 14-week-old puppy, and I think you do get to the point where the end of your tether and you think, right, I need help now.
Yes. Sometimes the questions we ask on the advice line are quite basic. People will ring and they've perhaps never had a dog before, and they're a couple of weeks in, and they sort of think, am I doing this right? Are things going the way that they should? And they just need reassurance. And other people can get further into the dog lifetime, and however experienced they are, they've maybe got a kind of dog or a dog with problems that they've not met before, and they will ring for advice as well.
Mm.
We can't instantly answer every question. Obviously, nobody can know absolutely everything, but we do like to think that if we don't know the answer, we will find it.
Mm. Which is a lovely support for people to have, isn't it?
I'd like to think so, yes. We answer about 8,000 to 10,000 questions a year between the telephone and email advice services. So we think it's quite well used.
And the email help, obviously that would be open worldwide.
Yes, that's right. Sometimes that can be a bit of a problem because someone will say, what facilities are available in my area? And if it's Sri Lanka or something, we may not know. but we can try and do some research for them and find out. Or if not, we can probably put them in touch with, say, their local National Kennel Club or something like that, who may know that information. So it's a little more difficult, perhaps, with queries from abroad. But from this country, we like to rise to a challenge.
Mm. One of the things, I know you've said you promote responsible dog ownership, and absolutely we're very into that. And I think one of the central messages of the website seems to be think things through.
Yes, I think that probably applies to many, many areas of life, but in particular dog ownership, in that people see cute little puppies and rush out and buy them, and they perhaps don't think through what's going to happen. So, for example, if a child wants a dog, one of the points that we make on our leaflets about things that you should think through before you get a dog is you can get a dog for an 8 or 9 year old child. If the dog lasts 15 years, that child's going to be in the middle 20s. They might have left home, they might be married with kids of their own, and that dog will still be around. And are the parents prepared to take on that lifetime responsibility?
Another example, I mean, my daughter's 10. And we've just had a Bichon Frise puppy that is her dog. We have thought through the issues of, does that mean that she will choose a local university? Or does that mean, you know, obviously if she does go to a university away, we take responsibility for the dog for the majority of that time. And other issues like, I think, you know, choosing a breed that's suitable, should she have children within the lifetime of that dog?
That's very true. People will sometimes contact us and say, well, we haven't got children, so, you know, that's not an issue for us. And then you find out that they've maybe been married 2 or 3 years and they're planning on children at some point. And obviously you've got to think, well, if you're going to have them within the next 15 years, then you need a dog to be socialised with children and to be trained how to behave around children as far as possible.
Mm.
And certainly to be introduced to children at a young age so that it's not a completely new experience when the dog gets older.
I think there was some other interesting advice that I picked up on. Obviously, we've just had our second dog. Our first dog is Labrador, 3.5 years old. Mm-hmm. And there was some very interesting advice for people with two dogs. You know, for example, use the dog's name.
Yeah.
So that, you know, it's sort of Buddy do this, Star do that. And it's not just a general thing. And everybody does it, you know?
Yeah, I think that's true because I have two dogs. And it's very easy. You sort of chuck the commands out there like sit or come here, and they both abdicate responsibility and assume you mean the other one. certainly my dogs think they have two names because I have Hoover, who's a reference to his appetite, and Maisie. And I will say Hoover come or Maisie come if I just want one of them. But if I say dogs come, that means both. So they've been trained to respond to both their own name and the word dogs. So that they are aware as to whether I might want one of them or both of them. Actually, if I call one, the other one tends to come anyway, just to see if there's anything good.
Yes. Yes, if I come, I might get a treat as well.
That's right, yes. This could be interesting. Let's just see what he's getting called over for, yeah.
Yeah. Is there anything else that you would like to sort of point out about PADS or the website?
Well, PADS is a very small charity. We do have, as I said, quite a large website at padsonline.org, and anybody is very welcome to come along through the website and get whatever information they need off that. But if anybody is interested in supporting us, then if anyone can make donations or run fundraising events or perhaps just join us as a member and keep in touch with what we're doing, that would be very much appreciated.
Mm. Well, it sounds like you're doing a very, very good and very needed job. Okay. Just keep on doing it.
Yes, thank you very much.
So, if you need a help sorting out dog-related problems, or if you're just looking for food for thought, check out the PADS site. And if you'd like to help them carry on the great work they're doing, you can find the details there too. We've had some really positive feedback on our guide dog feature, and thank you for that. I thought I'd share with you an email from someone who certainly knows about the subject. I'd like to say that I really loved your show about guide dogs. It was spot on. I've had a guide dog for about 6 months now. She's a lovely black golden retriever, Labrador retriever cross. She's fairly quiet like me, but she can be a rascal sometimes and absolutely loves people and other dogs. She's so friendly and playful. It took me a few months to learn to trust her, but now I think we're working fairly well together. She's very good at remembering different places we've been to, even if we've only gone there once. I love walking with her because it's so relaxing, and I know she loves it too. Whenever I get her harness, she's right there ready for me to put it on. I can't imagine life without her now. She's the best thing that ever happened to me. From Joe and Guide Dog Cindy. Well, Joe, thank you for your email, and I'm really glad you enjoyed the programme. If you're looking for a good read, Dogs Today is a terrific magazine featuring articles, news, columns, stories and advice of interest to dog lovers. The November issue has a great article about a book that claims you can teach your dog to read. If you're intrigued, there's a link to the Dogs Today site on the Dogcast site. We've heard stories about dogs and cars in the news today, and you may remember a clever Labrador, Archie, who was separated from his owner in Scotland and managed to get the correct train home, alighting at the correct station. Well, Archie has hit the news again, apparently managing to steer his owner's car to safety when it started to roll away with Archie in it. Now, either this is one very smart dog, or he's got a terrific agent. Well, till next time, look after yourself and your dogs. Thanks for listening to Dogcast Radio, available from www.dogcastradio.com. That's dogcastradio.com. If you'd like to get in touch with us, and wherever you are in the world, we'd love to hear from you. You can do so in a variety of ways. By phone from the UK, you can contact us on 0121-288-0922. From the US, you can contact us on our American number, which is 315-849-2022. From any other country, you'll need your international exit code and then 44121-288-0922. You can contact us on Skype with the ident Dogcast Radio. That's all one word, Dogcast Radio. By email, you can contact me on julie@dogcastradio.com. When contacting us by email, if you have the facilities, please record your questions or comments and send them to us as an audio file. That way we can include them directly in our programme. We can accept most formats, for example, WAV, MP3. All these methods of contacting us can be found on our website, which is www.dogcastradio.com. And as ever, the final word goes to Jenny.
This young man goes to the cinema, and in the front row of the movie house was an old man and his dog. In the sad parts, the dog cried his eyes out, and in the funny parts, the dog laughed his head off. This went on for the whole of the film, and the young man sitting behind couldn't help but be fascinated. After the film ended, the young man decided to go and speak to the old man. He said, "Your dog really seemed to enjoy the film. That's the most amazing thing I've ever seen." "It sure is. He hated the book," replied the old man.